Brought to you by Oklahoma Men's Clinic, the leader in men's health and sexual wellness.
It is Thursday morning. That means Dr. Lewis is here with us from SSM Health St. Anthony. I meant to text you early and give you an out, but I didn't know if you were coming into your office anyway. And I figured if you were coming into your office, you'd be this way.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't,
I was going to be out and about anyhow.
I don't feel as responsible for making you get out on the roads this morning.
Yeah, in healthcare, we don't get similar excuses to some other.
Same here.
Some other folks. So like you, right? We're in this together.
Okay, I want to talk to you. This is something that's a little more. Well, maybe it's not. It's personal to me because I have an awareness of this, and someone who has not lived in the Southwest maybe doesn't. When I moved to Phoenix, and that's been years and years ago now, but one of the things that people told me was there is a thing here called Valley Fever.
Yeah.
And you don't know really what it, and at the time, we didn't have the internet. We didn't know that much. Well, the internet was very, very young. We didn't know that much about it, like you can research it now, but they said there's this thing called Valley Fever, and it'll seem like allergies or maybe like the flu, depending on how badly you get it. But if you get it, you're going to know that you get it. So I was reading a story this week that Valley Fever is now not confined to those specific areas in the Southwest any longer. It's pervasive throughout this huge swath of the American West and seems to be moving. And I wonder if you know much about that. Is it because of climate change? I mean, I should say that eventually what I did find out about Valley Fever was it was some kind of microbe in the soil that it was almost like spores. It was almost like a Last of Us kind of thing, that these spores would get stirred up and occasionally you would breathe them in and you'd have this reaction to them.
Yeah.
So if it's not some kind of climate change related thing, why then the move to this? I mean, it is a very, according to this map that I saw in this story that I was reading about it, a very broad swath of the American West. And is it moving eastward? And is it something that we eventually will have to deal with in Oklahoma as well?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know that we have an understanding of is it changed, or is it just that we're really a lot better with identifying these things that are related to the soil. So classically, you had certain parts of the United States that would be more likely to have these types of microbes. These all fit into fungus type categories. And the one that causes Valley Fever out west is a complicated name. It's called coccidiomycosis.
You love those crazy names.
Yeah, man, I'm all over it this morning. The one that is more common in our part of the country here in Oklahoma, you could get, we nickname it Coxy, which feels like something I probably shouldn't say on the radio. But in this part of the country, you could see it here in Oklahoma, particularly in western Oklahoma, you know, in arid climates where it's windy and that dust kicks up. And if you're doing any development in our part of the country, we're more likely to see a different organism called histoplasmosis. And so histoplasmosis would be the one that you're more likely to see and can cause a similar syndrome to Valley Fever. And some people can carry these things chronically in their system. We'll find it often in the lungs. And so if you wall it off, a lot of times what will happen is people will feel just fine, but they may have some findings of scar tissue or calcium or nodules in their lungs after inhaling it those years past.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say.
Feels
We're that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
And then people look at that and go, oh my gosh, do we need to evaluate that for lung cancer? It's like, no. That's just old exposure that may have caused valley fever or histoplasmosis. Where they come into play again, maybe if you get a cancer, if you get an immune system failure or so forth, then your immune system can't keep it walled off and you can have some of that disseminate. There are others, like on the East Coast, we think of a different one called blastomycosis, and that can cause a different type of condition. So it's just really depends on where you are in the world, where you are in the U.S., what the climate is. Well, they overlap more than we used to think they overlapped in terms of location. So we don't really understand if there are true climate differences leading to the soil being able to sustain it or not in different parts of the country. Are we just better at recognizing where all it can be? Historically, what would happen is doctors wouldn't even look for these types of things in certain part of the country because they'd be like, that only occurs over in those states. Well, now we're more sophisticated. So it's really a lot easier than it used to be to just check for these types of things, whether it be a blood or urine test, see if you've been exposed. All of a sudden, we find it more. Well, we don't know if that's because we're better at finding stuff or if it's actually changed, you know, in terms of the environment. My hunch is it's a little bit of both. We have become a smaller world.
Right.
So somebody could traipse something around on a boot.
Right.
Right. And then it takes root.
So
you know,
let's talk about the ones that we get in Oklahoma. Histoplasmosis, is that right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
coxie?
that's more common, and then coccidiomycosis.
So how do you know that you've got that? Like, is it a similar, could it just be allergy seeming?
Yeah,
or are you gonna have a fever associated with it? Or like, and then how do you differentiate between I'm just allergic to red cedar or I've got histoplasmosis?
You won't be able to differentiate really between those two, and you won't be able to differentiate between other things. This is typically a finding that only comes out if you had chronic symptoms or if you had a chest x-ray that showed some changes. So the classic kind of early syndrome, if you're first exposed, is some fever. You may get some muscle aches. You may get some cough, maybe a tiny bit of shortness of breath, but it is pretty nondescript. And it's only when it becomes chronic or has changes on future tests that we go, oh, maybe it's this. For most people, it's just nothing to worry about.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know if you heard me mention this when you were driving in. I did want to talk a little bit about Ozzy, the announcement that he's not going to tour anymore. And we're seeing this more and more. I mean, I know the answer to why there are some people that can do it and why there are some people that can't. And Ozzy has had his share of issues through the years that have taken their toll.
Mm-hmm.
But he, even with all the issues that he's had, the SUV accident, Parkinson's, those things, he can still perform. He says it's not an issue of being able to perform, it's the travel. Why is it that as you age, that kind of travel becomes so much more difficult for you to deal with?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm fully up to date on the latest with Ozzy. Last I knew of that situation, they were trying to figure out if they could pull this tour off or not.
Well, they announced this week that they're not.
Okay.
That he's not going to be able to do it.
Well,
and the reasoning he gave was, I just can't do the travel.
Yeah.
And there's the potential that they could go to Vegas or somewhere and play a residency and fans could come to them. But I've talked to a lot of artists, and we hear stories all the time of, I'm 75 years old, I'm 77 years old, I'm 80 years old, and my body just can't take that travel anymore.
Yeah, it's quite a schedule to begin with, and it's not really just the travel in as much as it is the physical, you know, how you're getting on the stage, how you're getting off the stage, right? The mobility in that in that situation. So last I had seen from him, he was really dealing with a lot of recovery issues from additional spinal surgery that he needed to have. And that was creating really significant. It was to basically prevent him from being paralyzed, but he was struggling without a lot of rehab, without bracing and so forth to really get around. And I think that has been, you know, it sounds to me like that has been slowed. He also, as I recall, you may correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he diagnosed with Parkinson's at some point?
Yes.
So you've got that physical slowing because that's a part of Parkinson's. So those two wrongs don't make a right. So he could get up. Good grief. He could do, you know, go a little Foo Fighters, right? Be in a cast, sit in a chair, you know, sing like Dave Grohl had to do there for a little while.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing to say.
Congratulations.
Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Because I remember an interview with him a couple of months ago saying, you know, man, my brain's good, you know, Aussie brain, but brain's good. My voice is good. I'm ready to go. I want to do this. And my body just can't do it after this spine surgery and with other things that are going on. Well, the travel is not about like distance or a plane or anything like that as much as it is just up and down stairs, getting in and out of vehicles, all of those types of things. And they just, they take a real toll if you have other physical ailments going on, especially if you've got a bad spine with a lot of hardware in it.
Yeah, if I remember right, that most recent surgery that they did was to take out some hardware that had worked itself loose from when they braced him up after the ATV accident.
It was going to sever, I mean, I think it sounded like it was going to impinge or sever his spinal cord. And so, again, I'm not as up to date, but what I recall then is they were not only removing hardware, but they had to realign hardware, meaning he was still going to need hardware.
Yeah.
And so it's a big deal in your 70s. That's a big honking surgery.
Yeah.
And so it's a tough recovery, even if done perfectly.
All right, let's take a break. If you have a question for Dr. Kevin Lewis from SSM Health St. Anthony, get it to us. We'll try and get it answered in the next segment. There's a lot of stuff out there about dementia this week for some reason. I don't know if there was like some sort of reason why these reports are all coming out at the same time, but all of these different things that they think are contributing to the potential of dementia and Alzheimer's, which I think is interesting, and things that you wouldn't necessarily think about in your 30s and 40s that you might be doing that are later on in life going to come back to haunt you.
Yeah, we're finally getting research from trials that may have started years and years ago because you need that kind of time to see. And as that's unpacking for us, we're getting some fascinating insights. We don't want to overreact, but yeah, it'd be good to talk about.
So we're going to talk about that in the next segment. Dr. Kevin Lewis, SSM Health St. Anthony, is with us. More with him after this on The Cat.
The Rick and Brad Show.
Kevin Lewis from SSM Health St. Anthony is with us. We've talked a lot about virus over the last 3 years because of COVID. There have been multiple things that I've seen because I follow a little bit through the week, different things that maybe I'd want to talk to you about. And I read a really interesting article earlier in the week about how there are some commonalities between people that wind up with dementia and Alzheimer's in old age and having had viruses earlier in their life. And so there's speculation that might somehow relate to having that later on. Now, we all are exposed to viruses, and especially with COVID, I think eventually everybody's going to have COVID. So what then separates, how can you determine that having a virus earlier in life is going to potentially put you at a higher risk for Alzheimer's or dementia later in life?
Yeah, we're not at the place where we can predict that very well in general terms at all. And before we get all concerned about ever getting a virus, there's benefit, especially at a young age, to being exposed to viral illnesses because it teaches our immune system what it needs to learn.
Right.
So other than those things that could kill you and kill you quick, we want that. In fact, I'll give you an example. Like a young age exposure to certain viruses can prevent later asthma because your lungs learn to react the right way instead of the wrong way later. So there's some really fascinating things. Well, if a virus actually causes brain dysfunction, so the lining around the brain, I think we talked about that when we talked about meningitis, right? So if you get a meningitis from a virus, which is less severe than if you get it from a bacteria, or if you get an encephalitis, which is the crazy term that we use for infection in the brain itself, right, those would increase your risk because as your brain is repairing itself around those areas, it may deposit too many proteins that are bad for us in its repair mechanism. One of those is called amyloid, beta amyloid. The other one's called the tau protein, and they build up. And excessiveness or tangles in the nerves there are one of the key things you see under the microscope that contribute to dementia, particularly Alzheimer's type dementia. So a lot of medications are aimed at, you know, those types of things, as well as the neurochemistry. So COVID in particular has seemed to accelerate this because COVID was able to penetrate and cause neurological issues.
Right.
So we've seen people tip over the edge because of COVID if they were in a certain age group that they were doing fine cognitively. And it looks like over time that may increase the risk if somebody got pretty sick with COVID. There are other viruses through the years that we've often worried about may contribute to that. One that causes mono, Epstein-Barr virus. We've oftentimes wondered, is somebody who had that at a certain age at later risk?
Well, they mentioned,
because of that.
They mentioned zoster in this too.
So that was where I was headed next, which is the you know, the viral components either related to varicella, chickenpox, or zoster, shingles, which are what those connect to, which is going to be an interesting story to unfold because it may mean that I will come on here and be more melodramatic about, yeah, I think you should get shingles vaccine because suppressing that may make a difference, because we well know that those types of viruses love to live in nerve endings and contribute to that. So viruses that any virus, particularly respiratory virus, where it's just confined to that, I don't know that we're thinking much about that. But viruses that have a predilection to want to impact the nervous system are ones that it appears that we can. But there's so many things that have nothing to do with infection.
Well, here's the one I was going to bring up.
That can contribute.
This is why I said things that you might do in your 20s and 30s that you don't think are going to come back to haunt you later in life. There is a lot of reporting this week that the taking of sleeping pills like Ambien, the number that was specifically given, I think, was like 80%. Like, that is, it said it could raise the risk of dementia by as much as 80%. That's significant.
Yes.
How does that not, like, well, first off, how would, do you have a theory as to how that would tie together? Because what you said about the brain reparation makes sense. Why would taking a sleeping pill increase your chances of dementia later on?
Yeah, well, the direct connection is not well understood. However, any sleeping pill, no matter which ones we use, they're designed to modify your brain chemistry in the moment to try to help allow sleep to occur quicker. We've always said we need to be conservative about how and when we use those, because we didn't really have an understanding of what the long, long-term implications would be. And so here's the chicken or the egg part of the conversation. Is it the sleeping pills, or is it the brain neurochemistry that led to somebody having insomnia to where they needed sleeping pills? And there are characteristics where we already knew that bad sleepers and those with sleep disordered breathing that was untreated, right? All of those show up over time as risks for cognitive impairment later in life. So I don't know how to get to the bottom of that yet. I don't know in research that we've tied that together, but the whole complex of all those things together, we need to be paying pretty close attention to. Another thing I want to comment on is it's very popular when we write stories to quote the most dramatic number. So 80%,
right?
Well, 80% is what we call in statistics the relative risk difference between somebody who wasn't using sleeping pills and was. But the absolute difference could be very, very small, meaning total people actually getting Alzheimer's in the study was low. So you get two or three more that have it. It may be statistically significant, but the absolute risk is low, but the relative risk is really high. So in medicine, we're always teaching our people who are training with us, okay, be very, very careful about those statistics. Read into what the actual numbers are, because we like to boil life down into, when as a doctor, what we're trying to do is we prefer to get boiled down to a number that we call the number needed to treat to get a big benefit for that patient or the population, or in this case, the number needed to harm, right? How many people treated with a certain medication might lead to one more person at risk for this issue or not? And that's how we help determine the benefit versus the risk. And we like to coach our patients, okay, this is what that looks like. Because there is some data on improved sleep, improved sleep duration, all of those types of things, has cardiovascular benefits, no free lunch here, right?
That's
everything ties in together.
It's a weird sort of, what do you call the insurance guy that like crunches the numbers and says, okay.
Oh, the actuary type person?
It's a very weird actuarial sort of thinking that you have to do.
It absolutely is.
So one more question in relation to that. So you said we've always worried about any kind of sleeping pill or treatment. Does that include something like melatonin that actually is more of a natural thing?
No, not necessarily. So I am referring to prescription-based treatments with older ones like benzos, the benzodiazepine, that's the Valiums, right? The Ativans of the world, the Xanaxes of the world, because they can have some really rough short-term and long-term consequences, including a lot of addictive potential. And so the Ambiens of the world were a huge upgrade from that because their addictive potential was way, way, way less, and their side effect profile for the most part was better, but you still saw a lot of crazy side effects coming out of that class. And so newer versions of that class are a little bit better, so you can't just say, well, within that class of medicines, they're all the same. No, they're all a little bit different. Now we've modified to where we've tried to get to far more natural system approaches as to how we're trying to deal with that. And we're far more conservative about sleeping pills and like to use psychological therapies a lot more and try to avoid sleeping pills if we can. Melatonin is not shown over the years to have those types of risks. What we don't really know with melatonin is when somebody goes and picks it up over the counter, there's a huge range of doses.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody was taking 10, which is really more than you need as an adult, 10 milligrams versus one, well, that's where we have to figure some things out with melatonin over time. Were excess doses creating anything? But melatonin really just kind of works on one system, the circadian system. There are a few receptors on the heart and some other places, but that's not here or there. Whereas the medications that are sleeping pills, there are many receptors in many areas of the brain that carry that. And so you're getting the result you want, but you're also impacting other parts of the brain. So maybe not quite as specific. So a lot that we'll be watching over time with this for sure. And making sure, remember, one study doesn't a story make in medicine.
Well, and that's
to have a lot of research to find out, okay, let's pack it all together and make sure we're finding the signal we want to find.
That was going to be my question, is why all this reporting on the, specifically the dementia thing this week, and not just the sleeping pill part of it. Like there were numerous stories about associations and potential tie-ins to dementia, Alzheimer's later in life that all seem to come out this week or in the last week and a half.
Yeah, so a lot of times what you will find in these types of things is every society, so the Alzheimer's Association is one of the great associations in supporting work around this. I love their vision statement. It simply reads, a world without Alzheimer's, right? I mean, there's like, they are not going to stop until they figure this out, which is pretty cool. So they may declare that certain weeks or certain months are public awareness months.
Okay.
And so they may save their resources, and because blitz campaigns in that public awareness journey do seem to perform better than trickle campaigns, and it's for exactly what you're saying.
I mean,
so,
I see two or three or four stories, and all of a sudden I'm like, what's going on?
Well, and this is going to be a month where, because you know, February is always heart disease awareness month, right? So this is going to be a month that throughout, you know, in addition to Black History Month, this is going to be a month where throughout you're going to see lots of stuff related to heart disease, stroke, all of those types of things.
We'll talk more about that. And I do want to talk, help me remember, I want to talk about this thing that Damar Hamlin's doing. I think that's really cool.
Oh, man.
And,
it's
that ties into
awesome. I just saw that last night.
Month thing. We could talk about that next week.
All right, so it's the perfect month for that. Not that we wanted that to happen to him, but it really was the perfect month for them to pull that off with the Heart Association.
Yeah, very good. All right. Thanks for taking your life into your own hands and driving in this morning. We appreciate you being here. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rick and Brad Radio.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.